and you meet people, and you know that those things don't always pan out. Even if you go to TBEX and you have a great conversation with the editor of the Alliance Travel Insurance Company who's got a blog, and you think they're going to work with you, it doesn't always work out, or it doesn't work out for a year or something like that. And so we want to make sure that the time that we are spending on these pitches is really effective. And then at the end of the call, I'm going to do an exercise that's going to make yourself a personal roadmap on what to pitch in the coming months. Now, one of the first reasons that writing for travel magazines can be very lucrative is that there's simply not as many people pitching them as you'd think. Because right now, a lot of the prevailing advice to people is if you're going to start travel writing, then you should go start a travel blog. But the thing is that having a travel blog, as I know some of you on the call and some of you have travel blogs, having a blog is not just travel writing. You know, it's social media. You have to learn how to use WordPress. Sometimes you got to do video. You have to do SEO. There's so many other aspects, and it's a huge learning curve. But if you want to be a travel writer, all you really need to do is learn how to pitch and write. You don't need to learn all those other things and do a blog, but a lot of people are doing that. And so what happens is that when you go to pitch a travel editor today, instead of every single person who wants to be a travel writer pitching those editors, a lot of people have gone and started blogs, and either they're focusing on their blog or they started a blog and it got difficult and they stopped, or they're still trying to figure out how to set up their WordPress blog on their own domain. And they're not pitching those editors because they're trying to do all these other steps along the way. And so what happens is there's only a couple types of people who are actually reaching out to travel magazine editors. And one of those types is the people who just will never take no for an answer. These are the people who will write a horrible idea in all caps, or they will say to an editor, and I'm not making this up, they'll say, hey, dude, I've heard travel editors say that people have shortened their names and made up nicknames for them, people that they've never talked to before, to write a cold pitch. And so there's the people who just don't have the wherewithal to know that they should put more time into their pitches, who will just keep pitching editors all the time. And editors actually in their offices often have like these little files of the funniest pitches that they've ever gotten, and sometimes they'll go to conferences and show them around. But it's kind of like a thing, because if you ask an editor, he will tell you that he or she will tell you 9 out of 10 of the cold pitches that they get, they don't even have to look at. They don't even have to open them, because the person would be horrible to work with, or the writing's not there, or sometimes it's someone who pitches them the same story once a month. And it's, you know, a story about a road trip with their dog for a magazine about military history. And it's just not a fit, but they just keep banging their head against the wall. So if you are a halfway decent writer and you write a pitch that is coherent, which we're going to get to not just how to be coherent, but how to write a really good pitch later, you completely stand out from the crowd in the first place. Whether you are not sure if you have a good idea or your timing is right, you already have a much better chance of having your email opened. And we're going to talk about how to make sure that you get a response to your email later. But the thing about travel magazines is that they are not getting as many pitches as these online job boards or people who sponsor a TBEX conference that have a lot of bloggers, so you have a lot more opportunities. So that's one way that writing for magazines can really grow your income, is that you are in a much smaller pool. The next big way is that when you write for a website, a lot of people complain that there's $20 a post rates. That's getting better. It might be $100 a post, or you might start at $50 a post and grow to $100 a post. But the thing is that it's very rare that a website has so many different types of content that you can start with them writing something at $20 or $100 and then go up to writing something for $200 or $1,000. There's not a big growth scale, but the way that magazines are laid out, each magazine in the front of the magazine for the first 10, 20 pages, depending on the length of the magazine, includes a number of things that are in the industry called shorts. And these might be news pieces, they might be interviews, they can be all sorts of different things. But they're a great way for an editor to start new people, and they might pay something that you would think is similar to writing online. But then what happens is that once that editor trusts you, whether from one article or from doing several articles for them, you can move into doing features that pay $1,500 or $2,500 for that editor, and not in a super long period of time. I had one editor that he started me out doing a column, and then within a year, I was writing two or three articles for them every month, and then that turned into doing somewhere like $3,000 of work with them every month in the maybe the second year that I was working with him. So these are relationships that have space to grow, and not just because you're doing more blog articles or more of something. You're doing larger. You're doing long form. And these are the assignments that you want to turn into having anyway. So that's another way that magazines have a huge growth area in terms of what you can do with your income in a shorter amount of time. Now, the other way is that pay rates are just different with magazines. And I've heard a lot of people say, but there's fewer magazines out there today, so there's just less opportunity. And to start with, there's certainly fewer magazines than there are websites. That's 100% true. But the thing is, I've yet to find a website that will pay $2,500 for an article on its website. But that's the norm with the big print magazines. And this isn't even like, I'm not talking about Condé Nast or things like that. We just in the magazine database are adding a magazine called Modern Farmer, which is, it started a couple years ago. It's one of these new magazines that are very sleek and sort of part of a new generation of magazines that's opening after everyone's been decrying the death of the magazine and the publishing industry. And that magazine pays $1 a word for articles that talk about, you know, you might kind of call it like the hipster food movement or something like that. But that's a new magazine that's paying $1 a word, and it's not like a Condé Nast or a National Geographic. It's not necessarily a name that everybody knows. So those dollar word markets are out there in places that not everyone is pitching. And I put this together for you last night. I went through our database and I looked at all of our pay rates. So each of the little lines on here is what the magazine pays for $1,000, 1,000 words. So sometimes it's a range because a lot of magazines will give a different rate depending on how experienced you are or how much research is involved in that particular article or something like that. But if you look, there's magazines that you've probably heard of, like Backpacker or Afar, that are at the top here, and they're going to pay into the 3,000s. But there's also magazines that pay what you might think of as blog rates. So for $1,000, they're going to be for 1,000 words, they're going to be paying you $100 or $200. But there's a really nice section in the middle here, a rather large one, and this is only a small sampling of magazines out there, you know. But this section in the middle here, if you look from Arrive over to Modern Farmer that I was talking about, these are magazines that are regional. Arrive is in the Northeast. It's the magazine of the Amtrak, but they have, I think they have it throughout, but this is their Northeast edition. Yankee and Down East are another couple Northeast magazines. Garden and Gun is in the South. Time Out London obviously is in London. These are magazines that not everybody is going to pitch just by nature of the fact that they don't have a piece that's relevant to that geographic area. And so naturally, if you live in one of these areas, you have a bigger advantage. But they are paying 50 cents a word, a dollar a word, something like that. And these are magazines where the editors are not deluged in the way that they would be with Backpacker or Afar, with lots of unnecessary, unrelated pitches that take their time to go through. These are editors who know their geographic area really well, but they are sitting at their desk, and they need freelancers who are out there on the ground finding stories and finding things that they don't have the ability to go find out themselves to bring them these ideas, and they're really happy to get them from you. And so that's really the sweet spot of magazine pay rates. As you'll see at the bottom, there's ones that are also regional. You'll see Mountain Life, which is in the Rocky Mountains, Portland Monthly, Savannah. These are all regional magazines where the pay rates are going to be slightly higher than online, but not extensively. And so it can be a good click for you, but it's maybe not an editor that you want to spend a lot of time building that relationship with, like I was talking about, where they're going to be giving you more and bigger articles over time. But the thing is that there's a pretty clear divide between the really, really small one-city magazines you'll see on here, like Savannah or Portland. Those are what we would call a second-tier city, right? And then if you go to a larger city, if you go to Time Out London, or if you look at a New York magazine or something like that, or a magazine that applies to a whole region, like Yankee and Down East, which are in the Northeast, as soon as you get into a bigger city magazine or a regional magazine like that, you're looking at a very decent pay rate and something that's going to be 3-5 times what you would get for that same length article online. So the real question, though, is how do we get these assignments? I just want to see in the chat box for a second, can you guys just tell me, just quick yes or no, how many of you have ever once sent a pitch letter to a magazine? Okay, I've got not yet. I've got a lot. Okay, great. This is helpful. So if you've sent a lot of pitches to magazines, I just had a coaching call with somebody yesterday, and she's been published in Vogue, the New York Times, a lot of places, and she told me, I just get really depressed because I get a bunch of rejections. And I said, oh, really? So do most of your emails get responses? And she said, yeah, well, pretty much all of them. And I bet a lot of you who have been pitching or the ones who haven't pitched yet might find that when you pitch, you often don't get a response. And what I told this freelancer that I was talking to is that, I mean, obviously she's got some great clips, but that she's very lucky to get responses, because I think a lot of us are afraid of rejection, but what we really, really hate is to not hear anything at all, because then you feel like your idea is in limbo and you don't know if you can pitch it somewhere else. So what we want to do when we are pitching editors is to always go for a response. So don't think about whether it's a positive response or a negative response. You want to go for a response, and here's the reason why, and here's why I told that freelancer that she was very lucky, is that if an editor has chosen to respond to you positively or negatively, they are opening the door for that conversation. Editors think really hard before they take the time to give somebody a no, because they could just never respond, right? But when they say no, even if they don't say it explicitly, and I've heard this from editors of everything from the Paris Review, like a huge literary magazine, to small regional magazines, to trade magazines, when they respond to you, even if it's a no, what they're really saying is, I want to try to work with you. Send me some more ideas, but this isn't the one. And so what all the things I'm going to tell you are 5 steps to high response rates, because a yes is great, but a no is a window to a future yes. And so as you're working on your pitches and as you're doing that, keep that in mind. Don't be the person who gets a no and then never sends a pitch again. Because I just heard an editor say the other day in a literary conference, she's like, if I have told you no, but send me more pitches, and you don't send more pitches, I am in fact sad as the editor, because I want to see your writing and I want to get a piece from you. But I think that as writers, we think a no is the end of it's the end of the relationship, the door is closed. So what we're going to concentrate on is getting a high response rate, because if it's not a yes yet, then we can turn it into one. So how do we go about that? The first step, and the most important step, is to never, ever, 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 ever email info@fill-in-the-blank. Ignore it if it's in their editorial guidelines. And even if they say, please email us at this address, seriously, just ignore it. Because the problem with that is, even if that is their system, there's usually an editorial assistant combing through those. It doesn't get combed through regularly. If you have a time-sensitive idea, it's definitely get lost. But if you email an editor's direct email address, it pops up on their phone. I mean, we all have emails on our phone, right? And if your pitch is interesting, even if she's not in the mood to read it, if she sees that subject line, she's going to be like, huh, what is this? Because that's what we do when we get an email that's new and interesting. If you get a new email that's new and horrible, then you're not inclined to read it. But if it's new and interesting, then you are. And so we want to email editors directly. And so everybody who at the end of this call sends us an email, you're going to get access to the database. And I've just got a little screenshot up here that shows how we address this. So when you find a magazine that you want to pitch, you should always get your hands on the masthead, whether that's online or in print, so you can see the names of the editors. And then you need to figure out what is the email format. So in order to email editors directly, sometimes you can just go on the website and go to the editor's letter or the bios or something like that and pull the editor's direct email from there. The larger the magazine, the less common that it is. But it does happen. I do see it with a lot of smaller regional magazines, and that's a really good sign that the editor is interested in pitches as well. But the other thing that you can do is you can take the print copy of the magazine and you can go to not the page where they list the editorial staff, but the page where they list the sales staff, and go into there and check and see if they have a common email format on the sales staff, because that's more often than not going to be replicated for the editorial staff as well. So that's one trick. But now, how do we get them to look at our email or open our email when we do get through to them? How do we pique their interest? And the way that we do that is to not put something overly catchy or the first sentence or anything like that into your subject line, but it's to put an article headline. And so what that means, if you're not familiar with good headline policy, I know a lot of you have blogs and you are, but what that means is that you want to study headlines. You can do this really simply, really free online. You can study how to write good headlines, but you can also just go to the bookstore and walk around and look at the shelves and see what are the headlines that this magazine's editors think are so eye-catching that they have put them on the cover of their magazine, because clearly they think that's interesting enough that month after month this still grabs their attention. So just copy those headlines. I'm serious, just copy the format. A very common example is people always say with Cosmopolitan, every month there's some new, the 47 ways to keep your man excited in bed after all these years, or something like that, right? But they have these same headline formulas because they work. So they're a little different online versus print headlines. So if you only have a blog and no blog headlines, you might just want to take a look at some magazines. But when you are pitching an editor, go look at the format that magazine has used for its headlines before and pop your article idea into it. And then put the subject line of your email, just write pitch, colon, and your subject line or your article headline idea. And you can even put it in quotation marks so it's very clear to them that it's an article headline. Because what that does is it signals to the editor that you understand how they work. You understand that they think in headlines. You understand that that's an important piece of their consideration process. And then they immediately see that you are a writer with experience before they've even opened your pitch. And that's really important, because the two biggest factors for an editor in deciding whether to assign an article to you are, is it a good idea? And do I think this person can write it? So we're going to get to those in the next couple of steps. So the third way to make sure that an editor responds to your email is to start in the middle of your story. Now, there's a lot of people who talk about the lead, which can be spelled L-E-A-D or L-E-D-E, but what it means is that first piece of the article that's designed to grab people's attention. Now, the thing about the lead is that it's the part where most people fail, both in their pitch and in writing articles or blog posts or whatnot. It is literally the hardest part of any piece to write, because there's a piece of copywriting advice that goes, the job of the headline is to get people to read the first line, and the job of the first line is to get people to read the second line, and the job of the second line is to get people to read the third line. And so if you screw up that first line, it doesn't matter how qualified you are to write the story, it doesn't matter how interesting the article idea is, all of that is negated because you've lost the editor's interest. And so when I say start in the middle, what I mean is to take your story. Let's say you were in Italy on a girls' weekend and you went out for dinner and it was Halloween and you went kind of late and there was just an interesting vibe going on in town. And then when you got to dinner, the owner of the restaurant starts feeding you all these pieces of meat and being really inappropriate about it. And you're like, my God, this is like a 65-year-old restaurateur and I am a guest at his restaurant and how can he be talking to me like this, and so on and so forth. But if you started like I did, the editor's not going to be interested. But if you start with, as the owner handed me a slice of his home-cured fennel sausage, he couldn't help but make a joke about the double entendre of finocchiana and fennel sausage in Italian when I said the meat was too soft, or something like that. People are going to wonder about the context. The editor is going to wonder how you got in that situation, rather than you having told them all of these pieces of information that they're not yet interested in, that it was Halloween, that you were on a girls' weekend, what have you. So when you start in the middle, What you do is you take a part that creates a bit of curiosity on the part of the editor, and then you load it with details to make them want to know both what happens next and what happens before. And that's how you get them to the next sentence. Now, where a lot of people lack in their pitches, and one of the things that I hear from editors all the time, is that the person pitching has not read the magazine. Now, obviously, how do you fix that? You read the magazine. But the problem is that just because you've read the magazine doesn't mean the editor knows that. So one of the most important things you can do to get a response from an editor, whether it's yes or no, is to show them that you have done your homework. And the way you do that is to let them see that you are pitching them this idea, not just because you think it's a good idea, but because you think it's a good idea for their magazine and why. So I love to use the magazine Afar for this because they have very, very clear guidelines on the different parts of their magazine. So they have one called, that they don't run anymore, but it was called Stay. And in Stay, you had to have a very unusual type of accommodation. So maybe it was a yurt or a treehouse, and you had to have slept in one. You had to have stayed there. And you talked about that experience, and then you included four or five other ones around the world that people could stay in. So there's a lot of factors here, right? You have to choose a type of accommodation that's unique that they've never covered before. You have to choose a place that you have actually stayed or you're going to stay in the future before you write the article. And you have to choose something that's not so uncommon because there need to be a couple more of them around the world. Now, if you just stayed at a neat hotel somewhere and you pitched it to Stay, they're going to be like, why are you sending this to me? But if you stayed in the Treehouse Hotel in Sweden and you say to the editor of Afar in your pitch, I noticed that you haven't covered Treehouse Hotels before. I had the opportunity to sleep in this one. And I also know about four other ones on different continents that have a similar feel. Then they're going to know that you have done your homework because you have hit each of the points of what makes that section of the magazine different, not just in other sections of the magazine, but other sections of other magazines that have a component where they talk about hotels. And this is the number one thing that, that editors say all the time. If you have done your homework, even if they don't like that idea, if they see that you get the magazine, they want to work with you. So this is obviously having a good headline is important to get them to open the email. Having a good first sentence is important to get them to keep reading. But showing them that you understand their magazine is one of the most important things that you can do in your pitch to get a positive response rate. Now, this fifth point is something where I see a lot of people get tripped up. So I recently did a focus group in New York where I asked people a lot of questions about their pitching habits. And one of them was, how much time do you spend writing each pitch? So I'd love to hear from you guys over here in the chat window, just as I'm talking. Just throw out some numbers in minutes or hours about how long it takes you to write your pitches. I know for a lot of new people, that's often something in the 1 to 3 hours. I've even heard people say it takes 8 hours sometimes to write their pitches. I've also heard people who have been around for a long time say it takes them 15 to 20 minutes. So whatever is your number, that's totally fine. Just throw it out there. And that'll give me a good sense of what information you guys need about how to make your pitching process more efficient. So with that in mind, one of the ways that people get tripped up writing their pitches is that they don't know the idea or they don't know what is the place to start. Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of you guys say it takes you way too long. So we've talked about how to find an idea that fits exactly in the publication and how to figure out where in your story to start. But the next part of your pitch, after you've told them something interesting to grab their attention, then told them what you're going to write about and how it fits in their magazine, is to say why you should write that. And so I said earlier in the webinar that for an editor, there's really two things that help them decide if they are going to assign you that story. And that is if you have given them a good idea. And what I said before about showing if it's their magazine is very important for that. But the second thing is if you are capable of writing that idea and into a story. And for editors, they really think of it in the context of capable, right? Because to them, they can take your story, if it's a good idea, and rewrite it into something fabulous. But that's a lot of time that editors don't have. And editors at newer magazines are often very happy to take that time, because they don't pay as much, but they want to have good stories, and they'll work with you on that. And that can be great if you need to work on your writing. But an editor is much happier to assign a writer who's a strong writer and has a strong idea, a story, than somebody who has a strong idea and doesn't seem to be such a great writer. And so this thing about what do you share about yourself, people often end up saying five different credentials of their general writing background. They say, I was a copywriter here, I wrote for this magazine for years, 10 years ago, or I have this blog, or I wrote an article for this magazine that's in a completely different niche. But the thing is that none of these things really matter to the editor. What matters to them is, are you capable of writing this particular story? And so part of that is your writing ability. But if they've read your pitch far enough to get to the point of seeing who you are, then they probably think your writing's not too bad, or they would have just said, no, bad writer. So what you have to show them here is why you can write this story. And so what that means is really highlighting why only you can write this story that you have proposed. And so they have to assign it to you, as opposed to waiting for somebody better to come up with that idea or assigning it to someone in-house, or just waiting for the same idea to come in a slightly different format from another writer down the line. And so the way that you do this is to show how you have both writing background that is relevant to this idea and personal experience, research, that allows you to write this idea. So for instance, when I first started, I was writing almost exclusively for Italy Magazine, which was a print magazine and website at the time. And the thing about Italy Magazine is that it's actually based in Britain, and it's a British publication. And I'm American, and I had never written British English in my life, but my degree in university was in Italian, and I had studied in Italy and lived in Florence for a year. And I had a very deep background, not only in Italian literature, but also in Italian culture and also in Italian places from having been there. So what that meant was that I could do both sides. I could do the foreigner who's visiting, but I could also provide the insight that an Italian, somebody who'd gone to school there and knew that background, would have. And so when I pitched them, I played that up. I played up that I had both of these sides to bring. And then I gave them information only about articles that I had written in Italy. So for instance, say I've seen people say, I have an idea and it's so niche, I don't think an editor will buy it. But that's actually the best thing, not only just the best thing to pitch in general, but the best way to break into larger magazines. So I know a couple people who the very first magazine assignment they've ever gotten was from Oprah or a magazine like that. In fact, the woman who is now the editor of Alaska Magazine, her first ever magazine assignment was from Oprah, and it was because she chose a topic, something that was a personal story of hers. And I think a lot of times when we want to pitch larger magazines, we shy away from those stories that are personal because we feel the need to project a certain sense of authority. And what happens when you write the first part of your pitch, that lead, when you write that out of trying to show your expertise to an editor, you end up writing something very encyclopedic that's not necessarily either interesting to the editor or showing them an idea that they haven't been shown before. But when you write that personal story, when you write about how you studied abroad in China in a town where there were no other white people and there was no foreign language program and you had applied to your own program and created your own experience, that is something that naturally in your lead, it was an emotional, interesting time for you. And so that will come out in every single sentence of your pitch. And so when you get to the part about sharing information on yourself that's related to that topic, you want to tell the editor why you sound like that. Because I think sometimes we forget. I think sometimes in our own head we say, well, I've got this blog about such and such, and I'm going to tell them that I have this blog and that I've also written for this website and that website. But we don't explicitly say, I went to this place and I had this experience, or I went to this place because I had this background and this is what came of it. And that is, to an editor, you need to remind them of that, because otherwise, even if you have a good idea, they don't know why they should give it to you, why they have to give it to you. And so when you take these five pieces that I've talked about, the emailing the editor directly so that it pops up with a headline that makes them want to click, a first sentence that makes them want to keep reading, information on exactly how your idea fits into their magazine that shows them that you did the research and you understand their audience, and then exactly why you are the one who should write that piece, it's often very easy for them to say yes. But there's times when the editor can't say yes, either because the timing isn't right, you've pitched it too late, and the issue that that piece would need to go in has already gone to the printer, or it's already gone through proofreading, or perhaps they have an article already in production with another writer that's not like yours, but it's on the same topic, and they just can't cover that topic or that geographic area again. Or sometimes, simply, they're just booked up for the next year in that section that you've pitched. So sometimes you can get all of these things right and still not get the yes. But this is when you want to go for the response and build that relationship with the editor. Because like I said in the beginning, the most important things with these magazines is to get in with that article that might not sound like it has a rate that's so much better than writing for websites, but then to build the relationship with that editor. Because that's where you go from, instead of having a portfolio, and this is what my portfolio was like when I started in terms of income. I was writing for some websites. I think pretty much everything I was writing was in the like $20, maybe $50 range. And I was just working all the time. I was writing so, so much stuff, and I would just tire myself out trying to write on so many different topic ideas. But then when I started pitching magazines, not only am I working with the same editors again and again about the same topics, but that editor is giving me larger things. So instead of writing all sorts of different things for $20 a month, now I'm having 3, 4, 5, 6 assignments for $1,500, $750, whatever it is in that month. And that's how you get to having this $40,000, $60,000, even $100,000 income as a travel writer. It's not that it's hard to do, it's that it requires this resilience in pitching. Understanding that a no is an invitation, not a door that's been closed on you. So I want to leave a little time for questions at the end, and also just to show you the email address to shoot us an email to so that we can get you set up on the database. But in the meantime, let's just do a quick little exercise. So on your laptop, I assume you're all on your laptops, but grab a pen and paper if you have it, or open a little text box, something like that. And think for a minute of the last trip that you've been on, whether you recently went somewhere for the weekend, or maybe you're just back from a two-week vacation, or maybe you've been stuck with a lot of work for a while and you just haven't gotten the opportunity to go on a trip. So you might have to go back in your sort of in your own personal timeline a little bit. So figure out whatever was the most recent trip that you've been on, okay? Hold that in your head. Now, think through what you did each day of the trip, or if it was a short trip, like maybe hour by hour, if it was just a weekend trip. So just make a quick little list of the activities, maybe the places you visited. For instance, I recently was in Tuscany for 4 or 5 days, and it was kind of a mix of work that I was working on and also doing research. And so a couple days we went to festivals, so on my list I would write down the festival that we went to and the towns that we visited along the way and the places that we had dinner. Okay, so think about this a little more now, more later. We're going to move on with the ideas that you already have. But just then, when you get time after this call, take this list that we're starting right now and we're going to flesh out and keep adding to that from this trip, and then you can replicate this later with other trips. So now look at the things that you've listed. They might be one-off experiences, they might be a tour that you went on, they might be kayaking through a marshland, it might be climbing to the top of a 672-step tower, it might be a meal, it might just be, you know, an afternoon that you spent sitting in the sun, watching the waves on the beach, or in a piazza. Okay, now each of these experiences, what I want you to go and do after this call, or if you don't have time after this call, set aside like at least a half hour for yourself to work on this, is to take each one of those experiences and to think how you can parse it out not just, you know, making that one meal into each course. I'm not talking about how to break each thing like that, but how to look at it through different lenses. So, for instance, I'm going to go back to my Tuscany trip. So, say you went to a food festival. Now, that's something that you could write in a narrative fashion, right? You could, and I think a lot of people who have blogs, they tend to write either a list post or a narrative, but there's a lot of other different types of formats. So you could write a narrative that's sort of a step-by-step diary style, what you did in that situation. But what you can also do is something called a roundup, which is where you have multiple things that are similar of other food festivals in that area or in that country or other festivals for that same piece of food. In this case, we went to a chestnut festival, so other chestnut festivals around the world. You can take a conversation that you had with somebody there and turn that into a profile of one particular chestnut farmer who has had a stand, whose family has had a stand at this festival for 150 years, and their award-winning recipe for chestnut soup. You can have a trend piece on how, even in this festival in Italy that's gone on for 150 years, they have cake pops. They have cake pops made out of chestnut flour, and then you can turn that into something for a gluten-free magazine on how to capitalize on the cake pop trend without having a product that makes gluten-free people sad by using chestnut flour. So look at the different pieces of your trip that you've come up with, whether it's a meal or a tour or just sitting in a certain city and walking around, and think of all the different ways that you can spin that one experience, whether it's to a different audience or through a different type of article. Then either go down to the bookstore or take the access to the database that we're giving you and look through magazines on that topic and look at what sections they have that these articles, that these article ideas you've pieced out are a perfect fit for. So if it's that recipe, look for a travel magazine that has a story with a recipe at the end. If it's that roundup of five different places that have this food festival, Every Day with Rachel Ray has a roundup section where they do that exact same thing with food festivals. So when you have each of these ideas made into not just a topic, but a particular viewpoint of the type of person that would experience that topic, and then also a particular article format, then you match that to a magazine that, like I said, I believe in step three or four, has a section that approaches the idea in that exact same way. That is when you're ready to send a pitch. And so I invite you to try to set aside some time, if not later today or this weekend, both to finish going through your ideas and breaking them out into different formats and different audiences, and then to spend time in the travel magazine database or otherwise in the bookstore, matching those up with the publications that need exactly that kind of format and exactly that topic.